If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by the king of the Power Slam, the magazine, not the move. It's Finn Martin. Hi, Finn.
Hello, Kenny. Hello. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's the weekend, so you know, happy days. I'm going to watch the rugby later on, Scotland versus Ireland. Don't really give a shit about rugby, but friends are going, so I thought I'd go and be sociable.
Aren't Scotland leading the table right now, is that correct?
I have no idea. I mean, I know they won last week against Italy. Was it Italy? I don't know. My flatmate was watching it, so... apparently they're doing pretty well, which is very unlike the football version of Scotland. So we'll take our victories where we can get them, Finn.
Exactly.
So you're listening to whether you're listening to this on Patreon or in the main feed, it is, of course, Saturday that we've uploaded it. So it's a little bit late. Finn, you've had something kind of going on. I know you wanted to briefly kind of address what it was before we move on. So if you want to just say what you want to the lovely listeners about our slight delay here.
Yeah, it's been a difficult week. A close relative passed away on Tuesday morning. That was February 5th. She'd suffered a stroke on January 23rd and had been hospitalised until she passed. So, you know, it's been rough. It's been rough the last few weeks. This is obviously the reason why I didn't make it up to Glasgow for Royal Rumble. I'd just like to say recording these podcasts has been, you could say, a form of escapism from what's going on in my everyday life. But then again, you know, pro wrestling could be described as a kind of escapism from what occurs in all of our everyday lives. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's where I'm at. And I think we should now talk about wrestling. What's been happening this week, Kenny?
Before you move on so fast, Finn, I think what you neglected to do there, if you think that's going to get you out of your Jaeger bomb, I mean, it's still going to happen at some point. I'm still going to hold you to this Jaeger bomb. So you're going to have to just keep thinking about it, keep having those nightmares.
I'm going to have to acquiesce at some point, aren't I?
Yep, there's no way around it. There's no way around it. But it has been a crazy week in wrestling, you know, with WWE stuff and also with AEW. So I guess we should start off by talking about Raw and SmackDown. Raw and SmackDown weren't the most newsworthy shows this week. They weren't the most exciting shows this week in terms of what was going on. It was more, you know, last week was more of an interesting episode of Raw and for SmackDown as well. What did you make of this week's Raw, and what were your thoughts on it overall?
I would agree. I felt like last week's programming we talked about this last week, they did a lot to hype up Elimination Chamber, and that was just as well because they didn't do a whole lot this week on Raw and SmackDown this week. I thought the shows were kind of lackluster. That would be my overall evaluation of them. Definitely feels like Becky Lynch is their priority right now, certainly when Brock Lesnar's not there. Becky Lynch is their number one piece of talent right now. That was what I took away from this week's Raw and this week's SmackDown as well. You always know that when you're in that opening segment that they think a lot of you. She got to punch out Stephanie McMahon.
Should we kind of just for the purposes, because it is the most interesting thing, let's just talk about Becky on Raw and SmackDown.
Yes,
in one
let's
go.
Do that.
So she on Raw, Stephanie comes out. Now, did you, like most of us, get the feeling of dread when you saw a Stephanie Becky graphic last weekend?
Yeah, because they announced it in advance, didn't they, that this was going to happen. I certainly did, and you're thinking, oh no, where's this going? Is Becky Lynch going to be humbled by the great Stephanie McMahon? And happily she was not.
Happily not. So Stephanie comes out. She brings out... Becky interrupts her. The story they're doing is that Becky has a storyline knee injury. Stephanie wants her to see the doctors. Becky doesn't want to do it. And Stephanie kind of says, well, you know, if you don't do it, I'm going to have to suspend you. And Becky says, if you do that, I will not be responsible for my actions. It leads to Stephanie suspending her. It leads to Becky attacking her. Tries to get the disarmer on her, but officials break it up. Then there's a great little subtle moment where Becky goes back to Stephanie and Stephanie kicks her in the knee. Very, very subtly. You have to watch it quite closely to see it happen. They did show the replay on SmackDown. And Becky is then led out, quick promo with Ronda Rousey, and she leaves. And then the following night, she interrupts Charlotte Flair. Triple H comes out, tries to be nice to her and say, you know, just see the doctor. She says she doesn't trust the McMahons because obviously she's watched the television show. And and then Triple H tries to dress her down in what I thought was a really good promo from Triple H. And in the end, Becky slaps him in the face. So is it just me, or it feels like what they're doing is kind of showing you that last year towards WrestleMania, Ronda was the one that was getting to kind of beat up the McMahons and get one up physically on Triple H and Stephanie. And they're kind of given that to Becky now, which I guess is an attempt to get her on a kind of even keel to Ronda, which I think is pretty good.
Yeah, I think it is as well. And I mean, it is interesting that all the female performers, with the exception of Ronda, as we've discussed previously, all of them basically have to kowtow to the McMahons and do their bidding, and they're not ever allowed to stand up to them. And like Ronda was last year, and now Becky Lynch is this year. So it does feel like they've said, right, this, she is our chosen one. She's going to be our star. And I believe that she will move over to Raw after WrestleMania. And she will, that will be where she is. And she'll be a big part of the show then. You would think maybe, I don't know, because I figured after the Ronda Rousey, Stephanie McMahon match last year, sorry, the mixed match last year at WrestleMania, that we were going to get a lot more Stephanie Ronda storylines, and we really didn't. So I was kind of surprised by that. But maybe that's what we're going to get in the run-up to WrestleMania and in the weeks and months after WrestleMania is Becky versus Stephanie. As you said, Stephanie did that subtle little thing there, and that wouldn't have happened. That was done for a purpose. That would not have happened unless it was going to go somewhere. Because when it comes to the McMahons and Triple H and now Becky Lynch, these storylines and these angles are thought through, you know, and they're micromanaged. They're like, right, every part of this is done for a reason. I was impressed to see Becky Lynch stand up to Stephanie and then receiving the green light to actually attack Stephanie, which is something that only Ronda in recent times has been allowed to do. The only complaint I would have about it is that it just felt like 3 weeks of storylines in one segment. And I think if that had been built up over a series of weeks, or at least next week in the go-home show before Elimination Chamber, I think I would have preferred it if Becky Lynch had attacked Stephanie then. I think it would have got a bigger pop, and it also would have stretched this storyline out more, rather than just doing it all last Monday. That would be my only complaint about it. I just felt like they just rushed it.
I guess the test of that is going to be what they have planned this coming week, right? And if they have good stuff planned, then fair enough. But if not, then, you know, they're going to have, maybe they have rushed it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Triple H promo, I'm with you there on SmackDown, I thought he did a really good job there. Perhaps at times you're listening to it and thinking, he's doing too good a job here. He's kind of belittling Becky Lynch. But there again, if you think about it for more than a few seconds, he really needed to do that because Becky Lynch had obviously spacked out his wife the previous evening. He was not going to be happy about it. So obviously there wasn't going to be any physical violence from Triple H towards Becky Lynch. So the only way he could retaliate was verbally. So I think it was important for him to say something to her, and it couldn't just be like one flippant remark or something that didn't really matter. And I think that he planted a seed there saying that, hold on a minute, you know, this is all bravado. You know, you're scared of Ronda Rousey, everything that's happened, you know, you've done for you've had an ulterior motive. This has been some clandestine plan to avoid facing her, to avoid facing Ronda Rousey, because deep down you don't think you can defeat her. So I thought that was interesting as well. I thought that the dialogue was, it made you think. And more WWE, I wish more WWE storylines made you think. And this one really, and more storylines, promos, angles, whatever. And this one really did make you think, well, where's this going? Where could this go? So I thought it was a good follow-up to what had happened on Raw. So I thought they rescued it there. But I think...
Anything else on Raw that you think was worth talking about?
I think Ronda Rousey, the stuff with the Riot Squad, just felt a bit flat. And Ronda, remember like last year when she was doing things and she was rushing through them? Now when she's doing promos, she's speaking too quickly. It's like she's getting so wound up. And I get it, that's a character. But she just needs to just calm it down a bit. She's kind of difficult to understand at times.
They have now announced that it's going to be Ronda Rousey versus Ruby Riott officially at Elimination Chamber for the Raw Women's title.
Right, okay. Well, I mean, that's just a filler match. And one would imagine that Becky Lynch will be involved. Because that match means nothing without Becky Lynch's involvement, does it?
Yeah.
So there was a tag team match, Heavy Machinery versus Lucha House Party versus B Team versus Revival. Winners receive a title shot. Thought Lucha House Party did really well here, Kenny. Aha! Just kidding.
I thought if you're waiting for praise from me, you'll be sitting here for a while.
So Revival won after Shatter Machine on Dallas. I thought that was passable. Kurt Hawkins and Zack Ryder quite enjoyed that segment backstage where Kurt was saying he'd lost 250 consecutive matches. Then Zack said that they'd spelt his name wrong on the graphic the previous week and that they were viewed as losers by WWE, but they were going to get together and change that. So I'm hoping this goes somewhere. Quite enjoyed that. What else was on the show that was good? I thought the Road Dogg and Jeff Jarrett and Elias segment and Jarrett versus Elias match was a huge disappointment. Huge disappointment. One of the reasons why nostalgia can only ever be a short-term thing just felt like Road Dogg and Jarrett were badly exposed here. What did you make of it, Kenny?
I mean, this was an absolute train wreck that I just ate up every single bit of it. Because, like, if you look at Jeff Jarrett, he came out dressed as the Chosen One to the Double J music with the Road Dogg singing With My Baby Tonight, who the Road Dogg character never sang. It was like somebody who's only started watching wrestling 5 years ago was like, I'll put together a storyline of these guys from 20 years ago, not knowing the nuances of any of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I did love that. I've got to say, Elias, you know, a couple of great lines from Elias here where he said, Road Dogg, shouldn't you be over in SmackDown tanking their ratings? And then there's a guy in the crowd with crutches and he made him stand up for his performance. So, it was an absolute cluster.
Yeah.
I'm not going to argue to you that it was really good, but sometimes I really enjoy absolute car crashes. So for me, I enjoyed it, but I can understand why. If you're looking at it with a critical eye, it's maybe not going to win any awards this year.
Yeah. So bad that it's good type thing.
Yeah, one of those.
Yeah. I mean, Corey Graves had a really funny line. Why is Road Dogg out of breath? That was a good one. But then it did seem like after the match, Elias pinned Jarrett. And after the match, Road Dogg attacked Elias. And then Jarrett nailed Elias with what looked like a non-gimmicked guitar shot to the back. It did not break.
Nope.
Did something go wrong there?
I mean, you got to assume so. Or did they, because there's obviously, I mean, I know a lot of our listeners are probably too young for this, but tell the story quickly about the famous Jake Roberts Honky Tonk Man guitar shot from 1987 in the lead up to WrestleMania 3.
Well, that story there is strongly disputed
by
Wayne Farris, by the Honky Tonk Man, and we talked about this in depth in our epic interview in the Power Slam Interviews Volume 2.
Great plug.
And it's a nice plug there. This actually was not set up. People will think that it was, but it was not. Wayne Farris Honky Tonk Man.
Fenn sends me a rundown and he just says, Elias segment, and then in brackets, plug for the book.
Yeah, so the famous Honky Tonk Man versus Jake Roberts segment on the Snake Pit. Honky and I talked about this in the book, in the interview for the last book. And Honky claims that that guitar was gimmicked. And I can confirm that Jake Roberts continued wrestling for quite some time after that angle took place. Whereas in months and years to come, Jake Roberts claimed that it was a non-gimmick guitar and that he suffered a devastating injury from it. So, I mean, people can decide what they want. But, I mean, all the factual information, at least for my part, is included in that interview. You may not believe Wayne Farris's version of events. You may choose to believe Jake's version of events. But we talked about this particular angle in some detail in the epic interview that you can read in the Power Slam Interviews Volume 2. So I urge you, obviously, to check that out.
But the story was that later on, Jake Roberts then said that it had been non-gimmicked and he had got a concussion, right?
And
then...
Exactly, and suffered a serious neck injury as well. That was the story. So, I mean, it depends on who you want to believe. But I can confirm that Jake continued wrestling for a long time after that angle took place.
Almost like somebody is full of shit.
I've got to say, there was a pretty amusing segment with Dana Brooke backstage. She was there standing behind Natalya, ranting at her. And then we discovered that she had headphones on and couldn't hear anything Dana said. If only the rest of us were so lucky, Kenny.
poor Dana Brooke. God bless her. I do want to ask you, so we now have the official six teams. I actually don't have them in front of me, so this will be a bit of cardio for my brain if I can remember all these teams. Here are the six teams for the Women's Tag Team Elimination Chamber match next Sunday.
One of them is the Iconics.
Yes, thank you for that help. So here are the six teams. Tell me what you think of the match. We've got the Iconics. We've got Nia Jax and Tamina. We've got Liv Morgan and Sarah Logan of the Riot Squad. We've got Bailey and Sasha. We've got Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville, who are now called Fire and Desire. And we've got Naomi and Carmella, who I guess are Dance and Lights.
I'm sorry, Kenny, but Fire and Desire is better.
Well, I mean, it's not a high fucking bar, is it? It's not exactly. It's not exactly between Legion of Doom and the Heart Foundation or anything.
Kenny, what I want to know is why. And there may be a tag team out there called this. Why is there a tag team not called Raw Power? I think that's a great name for a tag team. Someone's got to point out now that there is a tag team and that you don't know what you're on about. But Raw Power, what a great name for a team.
Well, whoever Raw Power are, they're not big enough to really claim it. So come on, somebody just step up and take it from them.
Exactly.
What do you make? I mean, I'm assuming this has got to be Bailey and Sasha win the belts, right?
I mean, it's got to be, hasn't it? I mean, none of the other teams... I mean, the only other you would think it's going to come down to Sasha and Bayley and Nia Jax and Tamina. I mean, I wouldn't put it past WWE making Nia and Tamina Snuka champs. I mean, I hope they don't, but I wouldn't put it past WWE to do that. I mean, I would think it's going to be Sasha and Bayley. Although maybe it'd be Nia and Tamina and then Sasha and Bayley will win the belts at WrestleMania. Well, it could go either way. I think there will be the final two teams in there and one of those two Raw teams will leave with the belts and potentially it will then lead to a rematch at WrestleMania. That's what I'm predicting. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think Sasha and Bayley. I actually did my full WrestleMania prediction card with Sandra. Shall I read you, Finn, my full WrestleMania prediction card and you can tell me what you think?
Please do.
Okay, let me just grab it here. Hold on.
I'm just hoping this isn't going to tank our ratings.
No, I'll be fine. Fuck it. Okay, so I'll be kind of quick, but I'm being realistic within the framework of what's going on. So I'll read you the card, and you tell me if you think how likely you think it is. So I'm going based on WrestleMania 34, which is 4 pre-show matches and 11 main show matches. Here's what I think we're going to get. Buddy Murphy defend the Cruiserweight title against Akira Tozawa. A women's battle royal. But in the women's battle royal, I think Asuka will be in that. And I think it'll come. And I think she'll put the SmackDown Live women's title on the line. I think it'll come down to her and Nia Jax. They'll have a fun last few minutes. And that'll be the way to kind of get Asuka into something where she gets to win. And the last few minutes with Nia should be pretty good because Nia's pretty hot right now. Men's battle royal. And then I think there'll be a SmackDown tag Fatal 4-Way with the New Day, the Usos, Rusev and Nakamura and Heavy Machinery. The main show, I think, will be Bayley and Sasha defending the belts against the Bellas. I think they might come back and do a run with Bayley and Sasha. They're big names. Makes sense.
Yeah, I can see that.
AJ Styles versus Randy Orton. It's a match they want to do. Sadly, gonna have to accept it. Fatal 4-Way for the US title. Samoa Joe, Mustafa Ali, Jeff Hardy, and EC3. Rey Mysterio versus Andrade in their kind of blow-off match. Braun Strowman versus Drew McIntyre in a singles. Shane McMahon against The Miz with whoever, you know, turns on who. Finn Balor, I think he's going to win the IC title from Lashley, maybe at Fastlane. And I think he'll then go on to defend it against somebody like Dean Ambrose, because they could do a story with Ambrose saying, you know, if I don't win the belt, I'll leave the company, play up the shoot storyline, all okay. that kind of stuff. I think they will do Batista versus Triple H. I think they are going to do it, because they need some star power. I think Brian... Sorry, Finn. I think Brian's going to defend his title against John Cena. I think it's going to happen. I can't see anyone else.
Oh, no.
Seth Rollins against Brock Lesnar for the Universal title and the main event, Becky, Ronda, and Charlotte in a triple threat. That is my card. That is what I think is going to happen. And so to answer your question, I think the Bellas might be the ones to face Sasha and Bayley at WrestleMania. What do you think of my card? Am I being realistic enough? Am I out of my mind?
No, I think that's a realistic card. Yeah, I think that's a realistic card.
It's not necessarily one I would 100% say that would be my ideal card, but that's what I think they're going to do. Something like that.
Yeah, I think so. I could see the Bellas returning for a tag team title match. That would piss everyone off in the locker room, wouldn't it? But the Bellas are good at doing that, as if they care anyway. So they've probably got their own locker room. They're stars.
Well, you've got to get content for Total Divas and Total Bellas, so...
Well, that's right, you have. I mean, those TV programmes pay a lot of money. I mean, they are very valuable. We said this before. They are very valuable to the company as reality TV stars. They're bringing a lot of revenue for the company through from E. So,
I think the only other team that I would think would be a realistic shot for Sasha and Bayley who could carry a proper match would be Nia and Tamina. And that's mainly just for Nia, because the Iconics, the Riot Squad, you know, you're not going to get them in a WrestleMania match.
No, definitely not. I mean, it's a shame, really, if Asuka has to defend in a Battle Royal, but she really is the odd woman out right now, isn't she? The irony being that she's the champion.
But that really shows you the lack of depth and we've talked about this. Sondra and I have talked about it. The huge lack of depth of talented female women on the SmackDown roster.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think you can really do Alexa Bliss versus Asuka because they're on different brands.
It'd be great if you could. If you can somehow get Alexa over there and do it, I mean, I'd be all for it.
Yeah, I mean, at least that would then be a match. And you know that WWE would like to book that because Alexa can do the promos. Obviously, Asuka can't do promos, really. So, I mean, somebody has to carry... the promo end of it, so in the angle end of it. So, but yeah, that seems unlikely, especially on a show like WrestleMania, which is so competitive for time. So it is feasible that it will be Daniel Bryan versus John Cena. I don't really want to see that match. It doesn't interest me at all. But I mean,
who do you think would be? Because we saw Daniel Bryan. We should just mention he beat Jeff Hardy in a kind of okay match on SmackDown. Nothing really to talk about.
Yeah,
cut a fun promo before it on the show. But what does Daniel Bryan do at WrestleMania? He also seems to kind of be a little bit of the odd man out.
He does. I mean, this Elimination Chamber match, it's not really that appealing to me because he's already faced everyone in the chamber. I mean, he's already done it. It's not. There isn't anyone new, you know, bubbling underneath who could be suddenly elevated and pitted against him. In a match that's you know, that people are going to be saying, wow, that I can't wait for that match at WrestleMania. It almost has to be an outsider. It has to be someone like a Cena to make that match work. I mean, I've said before, my pick's Shawn Michaels, but apparently Shawn just came back for the Saudi Arabia show. Just beyond belief. Each time I think about that match and I think about the way he left in 2010 and him coming back for that in 2018, if that was it, to me, that's down there with the Bret Hart comeback in 2010. It's almost as bad as that. And it's just like, why did you do it? I know why you did it, for the money. But really, Sean, why did you do it? Do you need the money that badly? I don't think you do. I think you're doing very well. And whatever they paid you has probably not made that much difference to your life. So why did you do it? So, yeah, I mean, you're
wrestling. I heard a rumour that Sean wanted a bigger hot tub in his back garden. And he knew if he went and wrestled in Saudi Arabia that he'd get it. So who are you to question his fun summer barbecue times, Finn?
That's it. He's sick of that 48-inch telly. He wants a 60-inch telly.
Yeah, because Shawn Michaels can't afford a 60-inch telly.
That's it. He was, you know, thinking of some new rims, you know, for his SUV. So, I mean, that's the thing, is that he could have whatever he wants anyway. We know he's very... He was making huge money as a wrestler. He'll be making huge money now as NXT trainer, executive, personality, you know, you name it. You know, anyway, I've said enough about that. Let's just move on, okay? But as far as the lineup goes, you know, I don't want to, I've said enough. I'll just end up repeating myself, and that's what always annoys me. I'm sure it annoys people listening to this as well when Finley repeats himself.
Yeah, I get tweets about it all the time. Where the fuck could I ever stop repeating them, Ken? I
think the lineup is definitely feasible, Kenny. And most of those matches, I've got to say, do feel like WrestleMania matches. Yeah, Drew versus Braun Strowman does feel... It feels like that's what we're going to get. And hopefully it'll be a good match for Braun as much as Drew. Because let's face it, Braun needs a good match right now. He needs something to reheat him.
Oh, yeah. Last couple of WrestleManias, Braun's had, you know, kind of, you know, he had that tag thing with Nicholas last year, which, oh, look, it wasn't very good. People were, oh, you know, you just don't get it. It's really funny. Oh, look where he is now. It wasn't good or funny. The year before he was in the Battle Royal. But this year with Drew would be pretty good. Two other things I do want to touch on from Raw and SmackDown before we move on. On Raw, the Kurt Angle thing. Do you think this is leading to Kurt Angle doing some sort of retirement match? Or is it simply just they're placing him? We should mention that Seth Rollins has a back injury. He's been taken off all WWE live events in the month of February. It's a precaution. Apparently he's not in jeopardy for WrestleMania, but they just want to kind of, you know, be careful with him and keep him off for now. So, I mean, I think initially the plan was going to be Seth and Braun against Drew and Corbin. So is it just a case of Kurt taking his place, or do you think we're getting one last hurrah for Kurt Angle?
I mean, it feels to me like, that main event on Raw this week, Kurt Angle and Braun Strowman versus Drew McIntyre and Baron Corbin. I mean, it was a humdrum main event, that. And we had a DQ finish. I mean, and then we had a non-finish in the main event at SmackDown. So, I mean, I think you'd have to go back a while to find non-finishes in both the main events of Raw and SmackDown. So I just felt that the main event was, this should have been a big match. This should have been a hot match, but it just feels like a lot of damage has been done to Kurt. And we know that Braun Strowman is in desperate need of being rehabilitated creatively. He just felt like, didn't feel like a star here. I mean, we know Corbin, they like Corbin. But I mean, he's a mid-level player. So why is he in the main event again? I guess because they don't have anyone else. And I felt like this really flattened Drew out this match. Just feels like Drew's not that hot either. Through association with three acts who are struggling. I don't know what they're going to do with Kurt. I mean, I've no idea. It feels like when you watch him now, I don't really like watching him because you can tell his knees are giving him so much hell. His knees, he's having tremendous knee pain. Just standing there, you can see he's in agony. And he can still do things well, but he's nowhere near as good as he was. I mean, I'd like to see him just have one last match. To be honest with you, I wouldn't mind seeing him have a match with Daniel Bryan. That might be a nice way for him to bow out. Just have one last title match. But I don't see how he gets from where he is now to Daniel Bryan.
Story. It better not be with fucking Corbin, I'm telling you. Can't but handle like, it.
It's like, for me, Kurt, I mean, he had that great performance in the mixed tag team match last year. He's done not a whole lot in the ring of value since. I'm not feeling this program is in at the moment with Corbin. As I said last week, that match he had with Corbin on Raw last week, where he did the clean job, it was just like, what was that?
I mean, also, he's not in a position in his career. When you're in your early... Is he in his early 50s, late 40s, something like that?
I think he was born in December 68, so he'll be 50 now.
Okay, so he's 50 now. But when you're 50, you can't really, like, go toe-to-toe with these big guys. You know, you need somebody who can bump around for you.
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe that's where the Bryan match would be good. So.
Yeah, something like that, because you know someone else can do the movement, and because Kurt, even at this point in his career, you know he's a real pro. You know he wants to go out there, and he doesn't want to phone it in. But physically, he's really struggling, and I'd like to see him just have one more sort of series of matches, and I'm talking like two or three matches tops, you know, on pay-per-views, maybe one on TV, and then for him to just leave his boots in the ring or however he wants to retire on, you know, let him dictate the terms and for him to just bow out, because, you know, he's a guy that had tremendous pride in his performances. And for me, I don't really want to see this version of Kurt Angle. He can still, I think if he had a big match with a really good performance, a really good opponent, I think he could enter one last sterling performance. But him being used in these sort of throwaway matches on TV, I don't want to see that at all. I don't want to see that from Kurt Angle.
Yes, yeah, sadly, he's kind of become that guy who just does German suplexes and looks like he's in pain doing them.
Exactly.
Last thing I want to mention is big props to, I thought Mustafa Ali versus Randy Orton was a ton of fun. Really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the fact that Mustafa Ali was able to telegraph that Orton was going to do the RKO and didn't jump off the top. That was a really clever spot. And,
yeah.
I really enjoyed it. I think the handling of Mustafa Ali so far, I'm really enjoying, because even though he's in the ring with these main eventers and he's not getting the wins yet, he's going toe to toe and he's holding his own. And I think it's a nice way to kind of build him.
Yeah, he's doing well in the ring. Sadly, he's devoid of personality, and I don't think fans really believe that he has faith in himself when he's speaking. I don't think people are into the character at all. So that's a problem. I'm not quite sure how we overcome that. In the ring, he's really good. And the match with Orton, as you said, was, you know, lots of finesse there. You know, Orton, I mean, what will Orton be this year? Will he be 39?
I think he'll be 39, yeah.
39 in April, I think that's right. So, I mean, Orton still looks great. He can still go. We know that. He's never going to be the top guy. We know that. He's just somebody who's that sort of, you know, upper mid-level player. He's there to sort of put the big stars over. So it didn't feel like Ali's time to defeat Orton, but I mean, maybe that will come later.
So speaking of Randy, so the rest of the podcast today is basically going to be us kind of jumping from news item to news item. So fasten your audio seatbelts. Randy Orton is one of our first news items. So WrestleVotes, one of the accounts on Twitter who is quite famous for breaking stories, I think we mentioned it last week, had mentioned that a big WWE name was talking to them. The AEW had put an offer out to a big WWE superstar, and, you know, it's a big enough offer that they might take it. I think it was, here's the tweet. February 5th, seems like the first real shot has been fired. Sources say AEW has made an outstanding offer to a current big-time WWE superstar, an offer that is almost too good to turn down. Things is about to get interesting. Then Sean Sapp over at Fightful.com said it was Randy Orton, and said that Randy Orton is open to talking to AEW. And then WrestleVotes then the next day just put out a gif of Randy Orton doing his pose. So it seems like Randy Orton, whose contract is coming up, is open to talking to them. Do you think Randy Orton should go? And do you think if he did go, he could be... Is he somebody who should be on AEW's list?
I think Randy Orton is someone who should have left WWE years ago. Like many years ago, because he peaked. I don't know when he peaked, but it was a long time ago. He's been face and heel umpteen times. There isn't anything left for him to do there other than, as I said earlier, put rising stars over. That's his role right now. I mean, there's no point making him champion again. He can have a good match. We know that. He'll have a good match where we saw that on SmackDown this week. He'll have a good match with almost anyone that you pit him against. So, but to me, what is there left for him to do in WWE? He's coming up, was it about April, May 2002 when he debuted on television? So we're coming up 17 years.
Yep.
So, and
he's been with the company for 19 years.
That's right. Yeah, he was in developmental for a while before his main roster debut. So, yeah, we're coming up 17 years on the main roster. I mean, that's a damn good innings on the main roster. And he is still relevant. He can't be a top guy, but he can be underneath a top guy. But to me, what could he be in All Elite Wrestling? I mean, we don't really know what's going to happen with All Elite Wrestling yet. So we know they've got a lot of money behind them. We know that. And we know that they're going to do a big show in Vegas in May. We were pretty sure that there's going to be TV involved, but we don't know how that's going to play out yet.
And I should say that, I don't think it's a secret, but Randy Orton is pretty good friends with Cody Rhodes.
That's right, yeah. I mean, they go way back, don't they? So, I mean, that could factor into it as well. But I think for me, it's like, I would like to see Orton roll the dice and take... Well, it's not even a gamble, because...
Take a creative gamble.
Well, I guess it isn't. Yes, it is, in a sense. I mean, we know AEW has got a lot of money behind them, so the offer's going to be huge. So it could be comparable to what he's making now. It may result in WWE him even more money. So, I mean, if I was him, I would definitely look into this. Even if my long-term goal or secret goal, ulterior motive, was to increase my value to WWE. So you should absolutely do it for those reasons as well. We know WWE can afford it. They made a net profit of $99.6 million last year. So they can afford to pay Randy Orton more money than they're paying him today. If their backs are against the wall and they have to do it and they feel like he's somebody that they want to retain. So, you know, I'd like to see Randy Orton up negotiations, whether it's for his benefit or for AEW's benefit. But as a fan, I'd love to see him leave WWE and do something else with another company, wrestle different people, come up with a different character, different promo style, just change the whole package.
And he can take his name with him.
Yes.
Let me just run off a few other names that are in the rumor mill. Let's talk about them. We talked a little bit, I think, about them last week. AJ Styles, his contract's up in April. He's been quite dull in WWE for the last few months.
Yeah,
I really think for him, I think he'd be a great fit in AEW.
Oh, he would be. Yeah, absolutely, he would be. And again, he's somebody that's done everything in WWE. What's left for him in there? I mean, he can make more money. I think he's expressed an interest in working a reduced schedule, hasn't he?
He has. But I think the other thing is he's done everything in WWE with someone of his level. You know, great wrestler, okay character. If he was like some sort of like amazing character, then there's tons left to do. But I don't think he is that kind of guy.
He's not.
Let the in-ring stuff speak for itself. So if you're that kind of wrestler, then what is there left to do?
Well, that's right. I mean, he's past 41 now, AJ? I think he is. He 41, 42?
I think he's 42, actually. Let me just check. AJ Styles is... Oh, no, he's 41. He turns 42 in June.
Right, okay. So he's 41. I mean, he's still in great shape. I mean, he doesn't appear to have any serious injuries. He can still do all the moves that he used to do years ago. But I mean, it just feels like what's left for him in WWE. I can't think of anything really that's inspiring to me. But again, he's somebody that could be a beneficiary of AEW making him a huge offer and WWE saying to itself, well, hold on a minute. We don't want to let this guy go, partly because we don't want AEW to get stronger. And partly because we need him for whatever it is we're going to do with him. So this is how it was in 23 years ago, 22 years ago, when we had the WWF-WCW war. Oftentimes, people would be paid huge sums of money to stay to prevent the other side from signing them. Because a lot of it was you didn't want the public image to be, and this was the thing when Nash and Hall, and certainly when Hogan went in 94, and Savage obviously went later that year, then Nash and Hall went in 1996. They went from WWF down to WCW. It was the public perception that WCW was the place to be. That was where the stars went. That was where the stars worked. So you had this public perception that WWF was old hat and that WCW was where it was happening. And I'm sure WWE will be very keen to prevent a repeat of that, and for people to think that this new upstart company is the place to be and the place where the stars want to work. So a lot of that will factor into it as well. And when you look at how much money WWE's making, they can I don't know whether they can outspend AEW. Probably. I would think they probably can. So if they want to retain somebody, they probably will in most cases. Not every case, but most cases, just by simply paying them more money. And it'll get to a point where you're like, you know what? I can't turn this down because this money's too good.
The last name that's come up from PW Insider is the Usos. Their contract's coming up soon. Are they someone who you think have more value to stay in WWE or to go to AEW?
I don't think the Usos are going to leave because I think there are still things that they can do in WWE. It doesn't feel like they have done everything that they can there. Also, there's the Naomi. That's to consider as well. Naomi works there. So I can't see them going. I think they'll stay because there are other things for them to do. What do you think, Kenny?
Yeah, I think the Usos are going to stay. I think they still want that. They still want to have that WrestleMania match. You know, they want to have. Like, I know they were on the main card last year, but they want to have like the WrestleMania match where they kind of steal the show. But I do want to. Big news coming out of overnight actually, because WWE. I don't know if you've seen this. WWE have announced for the first time in years, they have announced for their February 22nd live event in Jonesboro. Where is Jonesboro?
Is it Arkansas?
Jonesboro, Arkansas, yeah. That there will be an intergender special attraction match of Nia Jax versus Dean Ambrose. They've announced it as part of a video. Nia has liked the tweet from somebody who tweeted it. Scott Fishman of the Miami Herald has sent it out, so it appears to be happening. What do you think of them kind of making this direction? A lot of people have said they would like to see some intergender wrestling from WWE. You know, Matt Riddle said that he's a big proponent of it. I know a lot of people who watch indie wrestling enjoy it. This is the first time WWE. I mean, I know they did the James Ellsworth thing where Becky Lynch got to beat him up last year, but this is the first time that it appears they're doing an actual proper intergender match.
Well, they did them with China, didn't they, back in 98, 99?
Oh, yeah, so I mean, like, since, you know, to the early 2000s.
Modern era, yeah, modern era. Obviously, the James Ellsworth stuff, he was just in there to take a beating, wasn't he?
He wasn't getting anything up on Becky Lynch.
That's right, yeah. He didn't really have any offense. He was just there to sell. I mean, I don't have any objection to it. It's not something that I really have strong feelings about. I think there's lots of things you can do with a match like this. Because there's certain moves that Ambrose, who will no doubt be viewed as the heel in the match, there's certain things that if Ambrose were to do them, he would get booed and then he can threaten to do them. You know, you can do that whole thing of like, I'm going to do the punch. No, I can't punch. And then if he finally does do it after refusing to do it, he's going to get, you know, super heat for doing it. So there's lots of ways you can work a match like this to provoke a reaction. And I think it's something that will have a lot of appeal, because it's something they haven't done for so long. It's not something that really appeals to me, but at the same time, I don't have any objection to it either. And if this is something that the wrestlers want to do, and I'm sure it is, and it's something that fans want to watch, then that's fine by me. What do you think, Kenny?
Well, I mean, given that China is our one example of intergender wrestling in WWE, she's not exactly the best example because she was dire as a wrestler. But, you know, in saying that, recently on Retro Raw, I was watching China versus the Stooges, and I loved it. So I'm open to watching it and seeing if it's something. I mean, what I will say is the idea of Nia Jax versus Dean Ambrose does interest me. The dynamic does interest me. So I'd be willing to watch it and see how it goes. And you know, there's other people who have said, you know, what about like Asuka versus Daniel Bryan or something? And there are options there. So, I mean, if they want to do stuff like that, I doubt it's going to be something that's going to become, you know, all the time.
And you're just going to
have like one belt that everybody fights over. But I think as an attraction, it could be a fun thing to do.
And, definitely.
I'd be open to see how they book it.
Yeah, absolutely. And because Nia Jax is actually heavier than Dean Ambrose, it works from that standpoint as well.
Yeah, because it's not like Dean Ambrose is doing a dirty deed to Casey Catanzaro or whatever.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, it works from the psychology is that in our minds, thinking about that match works in our minds before it even takes place. And we can also believe that Nia might win. And that's another big part of it as well. And because we know Dean Ambrose, he's leaving, she probably will. But I have no objection to the match. I would, if it were to take place and it were to be filmed, I think you just said it was going to be a house show. Is that right, Kenny?
Yeah, just in a live event.
That's right, yeah. If something like that, I'm sure they're just going to do it really as a sort of dry run. And if it's a hit, maybe then they'll present it on TV or a network special.
I'm curious to see if Mattel have softened their stance on it. Because I know Mattel had been the kind of the big proponent of no man on woman violence.
That's right, yeah, that's right. Maybe it's taking place without Mattel's knowledge.
Well, we shall see. I do want to just touch upon this before we talk about all the AEW stuff. So there's been this big story this week where they're saying The Undertaker's, you know, he's removed all of his references to social media, to WWE off of his social media, and people are now throwing around what his rate is per hour. Of course, I'm not going to tell you what his rate is per hour for me or for what we're doing with him, so I will not be talking about that.
I mean, it's almost as expensive as my hourly rate, isn't it, Kenny?
we had to start Patreon just to get Finn. But what I will say is, don't worry about us. We're fine. But the thing that's baffling to me is this isn't really a news story, and I'm kind of disappointed in most of the outlets that have picked it up, because I've always said that, you know, outlets like The Observer and PW Insider are ones that I trust on a regular basis if news stories come out, and Undertaker never had any references to WWE on his social media. He never had, you know, WWE Superstar. It was always just The Undertaker, and then there was a booking email or whatever. So I don't really know where the stories come from and why people made it such a big deal. I actually, initially when Dave Meltzer had mentioned his radio show on the Tuesday about, you know, Undertaker's removed all of his references, now he's taking bookings, blah, blah, blah. I actually emailed Dave that day and said, hey, just remember, we're doing this tour with him in May and it's sold out and we've already had it advertised. So he's been taking bookings for a while and that's not really changed, and he never has had references to WWE on his social media. So I think it's just all a bit blown out of proportion. I think it's because people are just excited about AEW and all this sort of stuff. People go, is The Undertaker going to go to AEW? No, he is not. But yeah, it's kind of a non-story, so I just wanted to touch on it.
That's exactly what it is. It's a non-story. If he were to leave, he wouldn't be able to use The Undertaker name. And like, how many matches has this guy got left in him? Hopefully one more. If he's going to do any more matches, it needs to be one more, and it needs to be a retirement match. Because after watching that Crown Jewel fiasco, he just needs to call it quits. And he's aware of that as well. I mean, it doesn't appear at this moment in time, Kenny, that he's going to be wrestling at WrestleMania. And you know what? I think most people are relieved about that. And that says it all.
Well, because the other thing is, the dates that he's doing with us are April the 30th to May 2nd. There's a rumoured date of May 3rd for the Saudi Arabia show. All I can tell you is he is not booked on that Saudi Arabia show as of now. Now, if that changes, then I guess we just roll with the punches and try and work with it. But I don't think he is. I don't think we've seen the last. I think he will come back and do one more at some point. But I don't think it's going to be WrestleMania. I don't think it's going to be Saudi Arabia now. But I hope that his last in-ring performance is not Crown Jewel.
Yes, exactly. I mean, Crown Jewel, the match with Cena, I mean, it was in the ring, it was just a bad year for him. And he does, if he's going to do one more match, it needs to be stated, advertised, promoted as a retirement match in conjunction with him being inducted into the Hall of Fame, perhaps the night before, maybe he will be inducted next year. I don't know. Whichever way they want to play it is fine with me. But I mean, I just don't want to see Undertaker wrestle any more than one more match. And as for him leaving to work for another company, who wants that? And he wouldn't be the Undertaker. He would be somebody else, because WWE owns the rights to that gimmick, its trademarks, name, probably all the different catchphrases that he uses. They probably trademark them as well. So, I mean, it would be a completely different Mark Calloway that we would see.
Plus, I don't see him doing it. He's never left them before. I don't see him leaving them now.
It's not. I don't believe it's going to happen.
Impact Wrestling have announced, because I know you're a big Impact fan, so we should get a little bit of news in from them quickly. They've announced that WrestleMania weekend, they are doing a show in at the Rahway Rec Center in New Jersey. Impact United We Stand is the name of the show. And they've announced the main event, Finn. Are you ready for this?
Ready.
PW Insider have reported, they'd reported that a former world champion will be returning to Impact, and the match is going to be, the main event is going to be the Lucha Brothers, Pentagon Jr. and Rey Fénix teaming up against former Impact world champion Rob Van Dam, teaming with fellow ECW legend Sabu. So that's the main event they've got for the show in New Jersey. What do you make of it?
I mean,
the sound Sabu, of disappointment.
Sabu still wrestling. I mean, I thought he'd after because he'd had to have a major hip operation, hadn't he?
You got to get back on the road and earn that money.
But it's like, I mean, is that really wise for him to be wrestling after that surgery? I mean, it's his choice, of course. I'm not excited by the prospect of this match, Kenny. Not at all. And I think it will be difficult for... So this is Pentagon Jr. and Fénix, right? Who yep. were at the AEW event in Las Vegas the other night. So they're just fulfilling their contractual obligations, presumably, to Impact.
I don't know if they're allowed to sign a deal yet with AEW because they're still under contract to Lucha Underground.
Okay.
So I think that they're allowed to basically do other dates for everybody, but I don't know if they're allowed to sign... It's all very weird because they're still kind of in MLW. They're still doing this Impact stuff. They're definitely doing AEW. I don't really know what their deal is yet.
Yeah, I mean, we saw at the rally where they attacked the Young Bucks, so we know that's a match that's going to take place at Double or Nothing. But, I mean, as far as those guys against Rob Van Dam and Sabu, I mean, they're just like, they're going to have to slow it right down, aren't they? They're going to have to slow it right down. And I don't really want to see that match. I just don't want to see that match at all, thanks. I can't even believe it's taking place. See that match. I don't see how it's going to work. Because, I mean, you know, the Lucha Brothers are just, the whole style is so fast. I have no idea how Rob Van Dam and Sabu are going to be able to keep up with that. Physically, how are they going to do it? And the style, I think there's going to be a styles clash as well, styles, plural clash as well. It doesn't appeal to me at all, that, Kenny. I guess they're looking for the nostalgia ticket purchases. And it's like, I don't think the match has ever taken place before. Is that right? I think that's right. I think this has never taken place before, this match.
No, it has not. It's a first time ever match in Rahway in New Jersey.
It's not a big venue. It's a small venue that like the indies use. So, I mean, hopefully they'll sell some tickets and they'll all make money. You know, that's my attitude towards wrestling. Even if it's something that I don't particularly like or want to watch, I hope it succeeds.
Before we move on to AEW, the Double or Nothing press conference, anything else you want to talk about?
We both watched, didn't we, the halftime heat match?
Yeah, I mean, so when I watched the halftime heat match, I was really disappointed by it. Because I was just like, well, there's no storyline continuity. I was just it was a bit blah for me.
Yeah, I mean, there was tremendous finesse there.
Great wrestling.
Yeah, but why is this match taking place? Where has it taken any of these guys? I mean, Velveteen Dream pinned Adam Cole. It was Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa, Adam Cole versus Velveteen Dream, Ricochet and Aleister Black. So, I mean, it was a really fluid match. I mean, all the talent looked amazing. But I'm not really sure why they bothered. And, you know, half an hour after it had ended, you didn't really have any memories of any part of it. And that's the true test of whether or not a match matters or not, isn't it? Can you retain any memories of it? And, you know, I can certainly more easily call to memory the halftime heat match between Rock and Mankind, which admittedly I just watched again about a week ago. But even prior to that, I remember details of it from seeing it when it was first broadcast. And this six-man that took place was broadcast on February 3rd. It's just going to fade into history and... You know, just be just another match that didn't really matter.
Well, you know, but the thing is, so we watched the halftime heat match, and I was kind of, you know, in my head going, it's okay, but there's no storyline. And then I watched this week's episode of NXT, and I'm even more annoyed by the halftime heat match. Because in this week's episode of NXT, Johnny Gargano comes out, and, you know, he's the new champion, and then Ciampa comes out, and him and Ciampa cut this promo together, kind of, you know, facing off against each other, and Velveteen Dream comes out. As if the halftime heat match had never happened. So they come out with this kind of tension of, you know, are they going to be partners? Are they not? Are they on the same side? Are they not? But we've just seen them in a six-man tag together. So I'm even more annoyed by halftime heat now.
Yeah, yeah, so. Yeah. I'd like to echo those sentiments, Kenny. It's just, what was the point of this? Why not give us a match? I mean, the idea was that lots of people who might not be watching it would be watching it. So why not give them a match that's going to give people a reason to watch the next episode of NXT and have some continuity there from the halftime heat episode and the following one? Just flies in the face of logic, really, doesn't it?
Just absolutely baffling. So that was halftime heat. But let's talk about AEW and the Double or Nothing press conference they did in Vegas on Thursday. And let's just see what they had to offer. So they opened the press conference by bringing out a wrestler called Sunny Kiss, who is an openly gay pro wrestler in the New York area, I think. They were getting a lot of praise for having sort of a diverse hirings during this press conference. So, hiring someone straight away who is an openly gay wrestler is, and they also will get to Nyla Rose, who is an openly trans wrestler as well. And they are pretty important signings. And you know, I think you're going to sit on one or two sides of the fence. You're either going to say this is great that they are, you know, being so diverse, or you're going to sit on the side where you kind of go, oh well, you know, they're doing that to get one up. And I think no matter what area you sit on, it's still great to see these kind of people in society being recognised and being, because you know, I the other day somebody had put me forward to be spoken to by the Sunday Post in Scotland about an article on women's wrestling. And yeah. I was speaking to this woman who had never watched women's wrestling before, and I'm trying to kind of give her a crash course in 20 minutes on what's happening. By the way, if you can hear my dog in the background barking, he has just been put in his crate, so I don't know if you guys can hear him, but ignore him. He's not getting the attention right now.
Can I just stop you there for a second, Kenny? So this person who interviewed you from the Sunday Post had never watched women's wrestling.
So basically she was... Why not? She had been given an article to do on women's wrestling in Scotland, and she was trying to kind of get up to speed as fast as she could. So one of my friends who works in media had said, well, look, you should speak to Kenny, because Kenny knows a lot about wrestling, so he should be able to kind of let you know where the lay of the land is and all that kind of stuff. And one of the things that I'd said to her, which I think applies here with AEW, is that I think if you were a young girl or a teenage girl or a woman watching wrestling in the early 2000s or the late 90s, there's not really anybody there for you to relate to. You know, it's more just kind of women doing mud wrestling matches.
Well, there was Lita, wasn't there? Lita was the one that a lot of the girls did relate to.
Yeah, she was the closest.
She was viewed slightly differently.
Whereas now, you know, in 2019, if you're a gay guy wanting to get into wrestling, or you're a trans person wanting to get into wrestling, are there a lot of people there for you to relate to? You know, I mean, I guess if, you know, for being gay, Darren Young was your representation, but for fuck's sake, can we not do a bit on that? As far as I know, there's not any openly trans people on any sort of mainstream wrestling show. So I think it's a really good... a good signing that shows that they're kind of up to speed with what's going on in the world. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think what we're all striving for is for everyone to be treated equally and the same. That's what we're all striving for, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So that the fact if you are not heterosexual, you're treated exactly the same as someone who is. I mean, you know, you go, as you say, you mentioned there, you know, the late 99-2000 era. I mean, I think it was the episode of Heat. I think actually it was Royal Rumble. And I was just looking at the number of homophobic signs in the crowd. And it was staggering. And you would never see that now. And that's a really good development, I think, for wrestling, for it to have moved on like that, so that people don't take those signs anymore. But I was just shocking. There was just so many of them. I don't know, maybe about half a dozen, or maybe even more than that, and just visible within the first few minutes. And you go back and, you know, one of the things that was most disappointing to me about WWE would have been in the post-Attitude era was the whole Billy and Chuck thing and the whole response to that when it came out to be a ruse, a publicity stunt, and just the reaction from the audience.
Because they got some good publicity from GLAAD. about it in the lead up to it, and I mean,
he did. And then Glad was absolutely furious because they were it was total stitcher, wasn't it? It was they were not alerted to the outcome of this storyline.
Do you think if they had gone ahead and had, you know, Billy and Chuck in character get married and kind of have a kiss and be this couple, that fans would have accepted it? I kind of think they would have.
I think they would have done, yeah. But it would have been very important for the organisation to get behind it and to say, and to just to treat them as anyone else, to treat them like anyone else. And that's what we all want, isn't it? So the fact that AEW has hired the two people in question, I think it is breaking down barriers, sadly, that still exist in a sense, at least in people's minds, perhaps, or some people's minds anyway, in 2019. And I think in years to come, it won't even be a story. And when we get to that point, we'll know that everyone is being treated the same. And that's hopefully where we'll get as soon as possible.
Yeah, and then the other signing that Brandi Rhodes had talked about was Nyla Rose. Tongue twister there, who is, you know, an openly trans wrestler, so that's great as well to kind of see that being represented.
And as you say, it's sending that message that wrestling welcomes you. It's treating people the same regardless, you know, of who they are. Wrestling's going to treat you the same. And, you know, that's what it's all about. That's what we should all be working towards. And I think wrestling is really trying now to do the right thing, which for many years it didn't do. And it would, I mean, if you go back to the 80s, some of the portrayal of certain characters in wrestling, even into the 90s, it was just, you look back on it and you're like, how the hell did this make it onto television? But society, you know, you look at it, some people might say, well, it's a social document of the time. That's what some very racist situation comedies from the 1970s had described as by some people. And you go back and look at them and say, well, it isn't. It's just vile. But if you want to look at it like that and say, well, this is the way it was, and it's sort of almost important for people to go back and read about this to see how much things have changed, then maybe, you know, maybe when you look at it like that, you feel very relieved or very pleased or heartened that we're moving on as a society. And I think we are. And it's nice to see that's been reflected by pro wrestling. And I hope it will continue. I think it will, Kenny. And these are all really good moves for the business.
So let's keep going with the announcements. Cody then came out and announced that they were going to be partnering with AAA. He then introduced AAA Cruiserweight Champion Sammy Guevara, who plugged that he was going to be at Double or Nothing as well. The AAA partnership, is that a good move for the promotion, do you think?
Well, it gives them access to a lot of talent. It means, you know, we were talking about last week, what are these guys going to do if they're not wrestling every week? It gives them another place to go and have matches and keep the timing up and potentially reach a new audience and just keep themselves active as pro wrestlers, because they obviously need to be wrestling and doing things. So they're not coming back to, you know, not coming to Double or Nothing, having not wrestled for weeks or even months. So, and also, it just gives them access to all sorts of talent as well. So, yeah, I think it's a really good thing.
Then we got the announcement that it's going to be Hangman Page against Pac at Double or Nothing. Which I think should be a pretty good match.
Yeah, Pac did a spirited promo, didn't he? He was a guy that's not really renowned for cutting... well, I mean, he did well, didn't he, as King Neville towards the end?
Yeah, I thought he did well.
I mean, yeah, that was... Pac said he was sent in via video or Skype or whatever it was. So, I mean, that was... that's a big match for Pac and a big match for Hangman Page as well. So, they did a good job promoting that.
Then we get the Young Bucks out. They say that... Tag team wrestling is a lost art, but that's about to change. Brings out the best friends, Chucky T and Trent Barretta, who I did like the nod that they were both dressed like Scott Hall turning up on Nitro.
Right.
That was a nice touch. And then the Young Bucks teased leaving, but then they were interrupted by the Lucha Brothers, Pentagon Jr. and Rey Fénix, who come out and then they attack the Young Bucks and say they're the best team in the universe. And then Pentagon Jr. cuts promo in Spanish and signs off with his catchphrase. So it seems that we're going to get the Lucha Brothers against the Young Bucks at Double or Nothing, which should be a sensational match.
I would say so. I would say that that match will be slightly better than the Lucha Brothers versus RVD and Sabu.
I mean, the bar there is well. Anyway, I'm not gonna say anything bad. Then we get Brandi Rhodes coming out. She introduces two Japanese wrestlers who are going to appear at Double or Nothing for the AEW Women's Division: Yuka Sakazaki and Aja Kong.
Aja Kong,
the babe. Oh, so excited about Aja Kong. My experience of her was obviously the Survivor Series 1995. I'd stopped watching WWF in 1995, started up again in 1996, and then eventually, you know, ordered the 1995 videos from Silver Vision.
Oh dear.
In the UK, and, you know, fell into a coma during King of the Ring 95, briefly came out of it for SummerSlam, then fell back into it. And then I remember at Survivor Series 95 watching Aja Kong and just being mesmerised by, who is this woman? I'd never seen... I mean, I saw Alundra Blaze and Bill Nakano have these great matches, and Aja Kong looked like she could kill you. And
yeah.
Then, I mean, she was... So I was always kind of fascinated by her, and then you had shown me yesterday, you told me to go and watch her match with... is it
Manami Toyota.
Manami Toyota. From the Egg Dome in 94, and I watched that. It was just so good. I mean, Aja Kong is just one of the best female wrestlers going from back in the day. You did also send me a recent match that she's had that I've not had a chance to check out yet. But what do you think Aja Kong specifically is going to bring to the AEW Women's Division? And are you looking forward to seeing her kind of getting one last crack at being a name in America?
I don't know. I mean, if you watch her matches from last year, she can't really move anymore. So our matches are very different from the Toyota match from Big Egg Wrestling Universe. I mean, she still obviously has the aura in Japan because everyone knows who she is, or all the fans know who she is and aware of what she'd done previously. The problem is when you're a veteran whose body is not in the shape that it once was and you wrestle in front of a brand new audience, they may not know who you are or what you've done, so they will not be as sympathetic to your knee and back and elbow and shoulder and neck problems as an audience who's been watching you for 30 years will be. So she I'm not quite sure how she's going to get over before the AEW audience, many of whom were not even born when Aja Kong was in a prime, so I'm not really sure, Kenny, how this one's going to play out. I think she will probably be used sparingly in tag team matches and will just do a few things. I don't think she'll be out there doing long singles matches. I think she'll be in there with somebody who can do most of the work and she'll just come in there. She still looks the part. I mean, she's almost ageless, isn't she? She's almost like Jushin Liger, somebody who could be out there forever and still looks the same. And I think if they book her correctly, and I'm hoping they will, She might be all right, but it's going to be a struggle for her to get over, as say, as a champion, because I don't think she's going to be able to do long matches. But, you know, maybe I'll be proven wrong about that, Kenny.
And are you familiar with Yuka Sakazaki?
Not really, if I'm honest.
Neither am I. Look at us, fucking showing up.
I imagine she may well be somebody who does all the movement for Aja Kong.
Yeah, maybe. I'm going to try and watch one of our matches for next week. Maybe somebody can tell us what we should watch.
Yeah, I need to as well. So, I mean, obviously people know I've had a difficult week, so yeah. I'm sure they will forgive me for that.
Kylie Ray was brought out as well. I think she was trained by Booker T at Reality of Wrestling in Houston.
I mean, that's an unfortunate name to have, isn't it, really? That's that similar to Kaylee Ray.
It's really difficult. Really difficult, especially when you're Scottish. Because it just sounds the same when I say it. Kaylee Ray. It just sounds exactly the same. So I apologise in advance for months of me getting that sounding similar. So yeah, some good female signings. You've got the legend in Aja Kong, and you've got three women who, if you watch women's independent wrestling in the States and in Japan, you will know who the signings are. I don't, but I guess it just means I need to kind of get myself familiar.
It does. You need to do some homework, Kenny. Pull your finger out.
I will try. Then we get SCU coming out. They're going to be at Double or Nothing as well. We get Dragon Fu, who's the CEO of OWE, the Chinese wrestling promotion. And he noted that, you know, he's happy to be working with AEW. And then Chris Daniels challenges their group. Is it SEMA? Is that how you pronounce it? It's a six-man tag at Double or Nothing, which is accepted. And then it's...
Is it Shima? Shima. That's right. Yeah. Formerly the Dragon Gate legend.
Yes. Last announcement is, of course, the phone counting down, the Being the Elite theme plays. It's Kenny Omega. He comes out. He's also an EVP and a full-time member of the AEW roster. He said the Elite couldn't just stop where they had. They need to make it bigger and better than ever before. They want to change the world. And then he's interrupted by Chris Jericho. Jericho comes out, they stare off, and then they brawl and are pulled apart. Fans are chanting rematch. So I guess we're going to get Omega Jericho 2 at Double or Nothing. So all in, what do you make of the... first of all, you called it on Facebook the worst kept secret in wrestling. Omega.
Yeah, I mean, it was the worst kept secret in wrestling. We knew he was coming in. Not surprising that he would have the match with Jericho, because they need a blockbuster main event. I mean, Kenny, we know Kenny's a tremendous talent. He's going to deliver on the night. The match is going to be really good. The heat's going to be off the charts. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, sometimes in wrestling, it needs to be a big surprise. And other times it doesn't really matter if it's not. If it's what makes sense and it's what people wanted, doesn't matter that it's not surprising. So we knew he was coming in. It was a... confirmed this week. They did the angle with Jericho. It was about what you would expect from the angle, with, you know, the pull apart and everything, and Jericho being dragged off. I mean, it's I don't really think they could do much more than they did. I think that's fair to say. Everyone knew Kenny Omega was going to be there, so maybe the story wasn't as big as they would have liked it to have been. But that's not really important. It's what happens in the long term that's important.
Yeah, I would agree. And you know, they've announced a bunch of matches now. So we've got Jericho Omega 2, the Lucha Brothers and the Young Bucks, Shima and SCU. We're going to have Aja Kong there. We're going to have the other female wrestlers there. We're going to have tons of stuff. So I think they're in a very good place now at kind of letting you know what you can expect on May 25th.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And as you said, they've got this deal with AAA. There's all sorts of things happening. The drip feeding things. The drip feeding us, aren't they, Kenny, you know, with information. And since they don't have a TV presence yet, and we're still, what we're talking, 3.5 months off, they've got to do this slowly and steadily. They can't just put it all out there. Otherwise, there'll be nothing to talk about.
Exactly. So, there you go. That's basically it for us this week. Finn, how can people get in touch with you, whether they want to say hello, or in case they're going, do you know what, I want to hear from the Honky Tonk Man on that story with Jake Snake Roberts and see what was really going on. How could they buy one of those ebooks, Finn?
Well, it's funny you should ask. I have the information in front of me. No, it's all the information's on website, finleymartin.co.uk. You already know that. All of the books are available from Amazon, iBooks and Kobo, but you probably already know that as well. Please check them out if you can. They can find me on Twitter at Finlay Martin. And where can people find you, Kenny?
You can find me on Twitter at KennyMC1985 or Inside_the Ropes. You can also go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/InsideTheRopes, where the first part of our Jesse the Body Ventura interviews went up. Interviews going up all the time. Also, I've started a new interview podcast that I do every Monday now, where I speak to somebody in the world of wrestling. We've done two already. Keith Elliott Greenberg, former WWF writer and New York Times bestselling author. This week I spoke to NWA World Champion Nick Aldis. On Monday I'll be speaking to former WWE ring announcer and All In announcer Justin Roberts. So I'm enjoying getting back into doing these podcast interviews again, so I hope that you guys are enjoying it as well. So that's pretty much it from us. I've just had a brain fart, but that's it from us. We're away, everybody. That's it. There's no more. Go away. There's nothing else to see here. Leave. Go home. Enjoy yourself. Have a good weekend, everyone. Bye.
See you next week. If I be tonight, if I said tonight.